Okay, welcome everyone. We're very pleased to have Sohitri Ghosh with us, who is a student at the University of Maryland, College Park, advised by Jake Taylor and Peter Shawn, and who has worked on quantum sensing specifically for dark matter, and will tell us about that today. Sohitri, please go ahead.
Thank you, David, for the introduction. So, hi, everyone. I am Sohitri. I am a grad student at the University of Maryland. So today I'm going to talk about our work on doing quantum impulse sensing with mechanical sensors in the search for dark matter. So with this, let me start by giving a bit of background about myself. So I work on theoretical aspects of quantum metrology and sensing, and I apply these ideas from quantum metrology and sensing in the searches for new physics. So my advisors are Jake Taylor and Peter Shawn at University of Maryland. And I have also been co-advised by Dan Carney, who is currently at Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratory. So with this, let me get started with the part one of my talk, which is a bit of background in the dark matter and dark matter search strategies. So I am not an expert on dark matter, but I just wanted to provide a bit of background to it. So there are all these astrophysical observations which provide evidence for the existence of dark matter, like the rotation cars of the galaxy or the gravitational lensing. But till date, we don't know the exact nature of the dark matter. We don't know its exact mass, or we don't know how it exactly interacts with the Standard Model particles. So the only thing which is which has been concluded by these astrophysical probes is that if dark matter exists, then it will have a mass density which is around the regime of 1 GeV per cm³. But its exact mass is unknown. So basically, it has a huge mass range from 10 to the power minus 22 electron volts at the lower end to some 100 solar masses at the higher end. So here, I am showing this picture in the context of detection aspect of it. So basically, in the lower side, this ultralight dark matter regime, how the dark matter candidates would look to the detector is it will form. So in this part, actually, the wave nature dominates. So it will look like a coherent wave field in the background. On the other hand, in the middle part over here, which is around GeV range, here lies the beams, which are the weakly interacting massive particles, which are very well motivated and have been widely searched for. So in terms of flux, it would kind of look like a dilute gas cloud to the detector. You look for the energy depositions from this these particles. And on the very extreme end over here is the the Planck mass range, which I am showing, which is the 10 to the power 19 GeV range. So here the flux of the dark matter particles would make it look like a rare isolated event. So you would see 1 to 100 events per year, and there are a lot of orders of magnitude even after this which is allowed. But I am not showing that here because from the detection perspective, we might not see them in a lab-based detector even at the rate of one event per year. So this is kind of the range that I am showing over here. So with this, let me quickly give quickly say a few words about the dark matter wind. So the idea is that that there is a dark matter halo, and we in the galaxy are moving through that dark matter halo at this velocity of the solar system, which is the 220 kilometer per second, and that is why there is a preferred direction of the dark matter wind, depending on it also depends on where the Earth is, depending on the season. And also there is some daily modulation of the field depending on the rotation of the Earth. So based on that, the direction will vary a bit. And I think also there is also a velocity distribution based on that. So here is a reference to that, how there is a velocity distribution around this average 220 kilometer per second, average velocity based on smaller scales, at smaller scales. So with this quick intro, let me now talk about the dark matter detection strategies. So as you know, that many researchers around the world are looking for dark matter candidates and their potential interactions with the standard model particles. So I will give a quick couple of examples, which are like the most famous ones. So I think one of them is the WIMP dark matter candidate, which is very well motivated. And for this kind of searches, what people do is look for like the energy deposition and nuclear recoils because of the scattering of these dark matter particles. Here, that is being done through like a tank of xenon. So this is from the xenon collaboration. And the other example I wanted to give is for axion dark matter particles. So for this is also another well-motivated dark matter candidate in the ultralight regime. And it can interact with the electromagnetic fields. So basically, people look for this axion photon coupling by looking for like the axion to photon conversion in a microwave resonator cavity and in the presence of a magnetic field, and then trying to look for those photons. So that is what kind of like the basic idea behind the ADMX collaboration is. So these are like a very few examples, and there are many other people looking for different kinds of interactions with dark matter particles. So here, our goal is to detect dark matter directly through its gravitational interaction. So let me motivate that for just a minute. So,
sorry, could I ask a very naive question? So you had this picture of the dark matter wind. What is the evidence for that? Is it experimental or is it theoretical, or how does that picture get, you know, covered?
I think it's more like a theoretical picture, like if the dark matter forms a halo and how the galaxy is moving through that halo, or being the galaxy is moving through that halo, is that what that determines that velocity, I think. And I think the astrophysical probes are trying to, like the astrophysical, many satellites are trying to measure this velocity distribution and mass distribution by probably like looking at the movement of the stars in our galaxy and all those things. So that's what I know about it. Yeah.
Thanks.
So with this, I will talk about the gravitational interaction of the dark matter. So basically, if the dark matter exists, then it has to have mass. And because of mass, it will definitely have gravitational interaction. So we started thinking, like, what if we can look for the dark matter candidates without having to invoke any other assumption about its non-gravitational interaction, and just by looking at its gravitational interaction. And in that case, if we can be sensitive to such gravitational interaction in certain mass regimes, then, and if we don't find a signal there, we can certainly say that the dark matter does not exist in that mass regime. So that's the kind of motivation behind doing a gravitational search. So with this, now the hard question is, can we be sensitive to this gravitational interaction? So for this specific interaction, I will focus on the Planck scale dark matter, which is the heavier dark matter regime. So so the question is that how can we, or if we can be, and how can we be sensitive to this gravitational interaction? So with this, let me show that at this mass level, as I said, it's like rare isolated events. A dark matter particle is passing through the detector, and at that short flyby time, it provides some impulse to this detector through like long range force. And because of that impulse, the detector moves a little. So that's the kind of basic picture over in here. And how, what is that small velocity change which is imparted onto this sensor? So this is at the order of 10 to the power minus 22 meter per second. So this is pretty small, as you can see. So we already knew gravity is anyway very weak. So this is the kind of impulse we would get from a gravitational interaction with dark matter. So in the more like in the signal processing side of things, what it should look like is that you have all these random noises acting on the sensor, and suddenly from this kind of like event, you'd get a spike, and we would try to distinguish that spike over this like a noise floor. And in terms of impulse, as we know that impulse is just the force integrated over certain periods of time. So we would try to look at certain periods of time and try to distinguish this spike from the noise floor. So the problem is this spike is not as big as I am showing it here. It is just like a randomly generated data, but it is buried in the noise floor. So what we proposed back in 2019 in this paper is that if we have a 3D array of many tiny force sensors, here they are being shown as like this suspended pendulum, then and then I will play this video. So basically, if a dark matter candidate is passing through this array, then it interacts with this individual sensor in the array through this gravitational force, but it also creates a correlated track-like signature when it moves through it. So because of that, the signal to noise ratio would be enhanced because of by the like the square root of the number of sensors in the array. And also like because of this correlated track, what we would gain is the directional information about the dark matter, which is very crucial as I was talking about the dark matter wind. So people usually expect the dark matter to come from a specific direction at specific season and specific time. So that is one thing. And another is advantage is the background rejection, because many backgrounds do not have such a correlated track like signature. So it would be easier to distinguish this signal from many background events, which are like traditional backgrounds in many searches. So with this, I will quickly show the like the event per year in here. So as I mentioned before, at this Planck scale dark matter like regime, and for a square meter kind of device, we would get just one event per year. So that is why we are not thinking about more than Planck mass range anymore, because then we would not even see the events in 10 years or so. So this is kind of where we are cutting off, like this is what we want to achieve. So with this, let me show like how do we want to read out this impulse. So this is like how in like a standard way to read out that impulse basically. So when there is an impulse imparted onto the detector, it moves the detector a little bit and it shifts the position, and we can probe it with light, and the light space coming out of this cavity would have the information about the position of the system. So that is the very standard optical measurements people do. So the thing I wanted to mention here is that there are obviously like other random forces acting on this detector, which provides noise, and that is kind of like the environmental noise. But also the light itself like exerts radiation pressure force on the sensor when we probe it with light. So that is also source of the measurement induced noise. And I will show you in a bit why we are concerned about it. So with this, let me talk a bit about the standard quantum limit in this kind of measurements. So if we are doing a continuous position measurement, like the one I showed you earlier, so because of the Heisenberg uncertainty principle, what happens is when the position uncertainty decreases, when you make a like a position measurement, the momentum uncertainty would increase. And when you try to do a subsequent position measurement, so there is a free evolution of the system in between, and that depends on the momentum, even for a free particle case. And at that time, the momentum uncertainty gets fed back into the position uncertainty, and the overall position uncertainty increases. So even if we want to optimize it with respect to the initial spread, we would see that we will not be able to resolve it better than this quantity. So this is the kind of standard quantum limit. So this is assuming that there are no non-classical correlations in between these like conjugate quadratures. So at this point, if we are doing this kind of measurement, and if we are doing a impulse, like trying to infer the impulse from here, this is what the impulse SQL should look like. And in terms of what is the velocity resolution at this SQL, so we can probably achieve this 10 to the minus 17 meter per second kind of velocity resolution in comparison to what we need to achieve, which is around 10 to the power minus 22 meter per second for our gravitational signal. So as you can see, there is this huge gap between what can be achieved at the SQL level and what we need to achieve for the gravitational detection. And this is the gap that we are trying to close. So with this,
sorry, could you just say it again what the gap is? Or
oh yeah, so at, if we are measuring at the at the SQL level, then this is the velocity, like the minimum velocity we can resolve, like 10 to the power minus 17 meter per second. But we need to actually resolve a velocity at the level of like 10 to the power minus 22 meter per second for this dark matter signal. Yeah. So, yeah. Yeah. So with this, I would quickly like to show all these challenges we have en route in for like gravitational detection of dark matter. So here are like, they have been categorized into these four major parts. So the first part is about the scale of the device, because we would need a lot of sensors in an array in order to be like sensitive to these dark matter candidates. And each have to be like pretty heavy, accelerometers, like milligram scale. And also there is this data analysis challenge, because we will have a tremendous amount of data from all this huge number of sensors. The other two aspects are about the noise in the system, as I was talking about. So on the left-hand side, we have the environmental noise. And on the right-hand side, we have the measurement added noise. And for the rest of the talk, I will concentrate on just this part, like how do we suppress the measurement added noise below the SQL level in order to approach this sensitivity. So Before moving to the second part of my talk, I just wanted to give a quick shout out to the WindChime collaboration. So this is a collaboration among many particle physicists and quantum physicists across various universities and national labs, as you can see here. And we are working on different aspects of this problem. So people are working on the fabrication side of the accelerometers and the data analysis part and the optical readout part, and these parts are about the theory. So this is the kind of measurement induced noise suppressed readout theory that we are working on, and people are also working on the phenomenology side of it. So with this, I would like to go to the more technical part of the the measurement added noise suppression part of my talk. So here is the brief outline. So the I will first discuss the standard quantum limit in terms of the optomechanical measurements, and then I will talk about the methods to go below the standard quantum limit. And then at the end, time permitting, I will talk a bit about benefits of moving from the optical domain readout to microwave domain readout. So with this, let me come back to this impulse sensing problem again. So here you have this optomechanical system, which has a fixed mirror on one side and a movable mirror on the other side. So we want to probe the change in position of this system with light. So the Hamiltonian, the interaction Hamiltonian actually looks like this, which is an interaction between the position of this system, which is small x, and capital X is the amplitude quadrature of light. And capital G is actually the optomechanical coupling strength, which depends on the power of the probing light. So basically, because of this interaction Hamiltonian, the output phase quadrature, which is denoted by Y out here, that picks up the information about the position change of this system. And that is what we read out through homotonic detection at the end. So that is the kind of basic setup. And again, I have already talked about the sources of noise in this measurement. One is the environmental noise, another is the measurement added noise. So for optomechanical system, this measurement added noise is categorized into these two parts. So first is the short noise, which arises from the statistical counting error of photons. And then you have the back action noise, which arises because of these photons with which you are probing the system, those imparting random momentum kicks onto the detector. So these two noises actually are related to the power of the probing light in kind of like opposite way. So the short noise decreases when you increase the power of the probing light, because it's just the statistical counting error of photons. On the other hand, the back action noise increases, as we would expect, with the number of photons. So with this in mind, I wanted to show this the noise spectra, power spectrum density plots that people usually use. So this one is in force units. So here you have the short noise, which is the green line, and the red line is the back action noise. And they have been balanced at this specific frequency, which is like 1 megahertz. So that is kind of like our target frequency. So this balancing has been done by optimizing the laser power, which is kind of like a frequency dependent optimization. So we have optimized the laser power to balance the short noise and back action noise over in here. And that kind of defines the standard quantum limit for this optomechanical measurement. So you can actually do this kind of frequency dependent optimization of laser power over the whole frequency regime. But for our case, we are just showing the standard quantum limit at this very specific frequency, which is like our frequency of interest. So with this, I also wanted to show a kind of like a very general mathematical formalism for the noise PhD. So here, what it means is the first term, which is Fn square, that actually connects to the thermal noise or the environmental noise part, which acts on the mechanical sensor. And then you have the Xn square, which is the amplitude quadrature noise of light, and it connects directly to the back action noise part. And then you have Yn square, which is the phase quadrature noise of light, and that connects to the short noise part of this system. So with this description in mind, I would like to now talk a bit about the methods to go below the standard quantum limit. So this was the general representation that I just showed you. And this is when we were probing the system with a coherent source of light. So obviously there are ways to go beyond the standard quantum limit. And one of them is squeezing, which is pretty well known in the context of, I think, advanced LIGO, when they actually detected the gravitational waves and they could reach the sensitivity. And one of the ways was to introduce squeezing. So I wanted to capture the essence of how squeezing how squeezing can reduce the overall noise floor here. So basically, when we squeeze one of the quadrature uncertainty at the expense of increasing the uncertainty in the other quadrature, there is also a cross correlation between these quadratures which gets introduced. And by tuning in the squeezing parameters well, we can actually make that cross correlation term negative. And that can add a overall negative contribution to this power spectrum noise density. And that kind of can lower the overall noise floor in this way. And I would quickly like to show another way, which is the back action evading measurements. So in the back action evading measurements, what we would like to do is we just need to reduce this specific back action noise term, which is the Xn square term. So basically taking the beta to zero. So this kind of shows you that there is a way to combine these quantum resources. So we can first do a back action evading kind of measurement where this back action term goes to zero. And then you can reduce the leftover short noise term by squeezing it. And then the overall noise can get reduced. So this is kind of like a very crude description of how these quantum resources help in achieving noise floor below the SQL. So I will go into a bit more detail in my next slides. So here I have the squeezing, the benefits of squeezing slide in terms of power. So this is a work done in collaboration with Oak Ridge National Laboratory with the people mentioned here. So this is again a theoretical plot. So here what we are showing is that if we use squeezing, then we can achieve the same SQL level noise floor at a lower power than if we use just a coherent source of light. We compare this blue dashed line with the red solid line. And if we tune in the squeezing parameters well, which is, so R is actually the squeezing strength and pi is the squeezing angle. So if we tune the squeezing parameters, we can also achieve a lower noise floor at the original power than the SQL. So this is kind of, this captures the essence of how squeezing can reduce the noise below SQL or helps us in terms of power requirement. So this is one of the things I wanted to talk about. And then in the next slide, I wanted to talk about doing a back action evading measurement through a continuous momentum measurement. So I showed you this picture, I think a few slides before, where you have this continuous position measurement, where you have a probe to position coupling. Now, instead, I wanted to talk about like what if we have a probe to momentum coupling, and we if we can continuously monitor the momentum instead. So we will if we can continuously momentum sorry monitor the momentum, then we would not run into the previous problem, because if we are working at the free particle limit, so even if the uncertainty in position increases when you make a momentum measurement, in the evolution time in between, there is no position dependence in the free particle limit. So basically, the position information does not get fed back into the momentum information. And that's why we can continuously monitor the momentum over time without increasing the error in it. So that kind of shows like the quantum non-demolition benefit of doing a continuous momentum measurement. So that's why what we want to do is move from a position to probe coupling to a position to moment, sorry, to a probe to momentum coupling, in order to have like this kind of quantum non-demolition or QND benefits from doing a continuous momentum measurement. So in the next slide, I will show a practical example of how this can be achieved. So this is a setup which was first proposed by Brzezinski and Khalili in the context of gravitational wave detection. And now we are using it for our impulse metrology problem in this paper. So here what happens is you have two ring cavities which share some mechanical element in between. So here what happens is that the light actually interacts twice with this mechanical oscillator from both sides. So when the light interacts once, like first time in this first cavity, it picks up the information about the position at that time. And then after a certain delay time, it gets fed back to the second cavity. And at that time, it picks up the information about the position at that time, like with a negative sign, because it is interacting from the opposite side. So the output phase that we get out of the get out from these cavities is actually the differences in the position in these two time. So basically that is proportional to the velocity of the system or momentum of the system. So even though the interaction Hamiltonian here does not have a like a direct probe to momentum coupling, because of like the design of this system, it essentially becomes a velocity sensing or momentum sensing protocol. And if you want to think about like how it is back action evading, it is kind of like because the light fields, optical fields are interacting with the system from opposite sides, it kind of cancels out some of the random momentum peaks, which gives rise to the back action noise. So that's how we get a back action evading benefit from this system. So with this, I wanted to quickly show like the noise PSD plots again. So in comparison to the position PSD plot, there is a like a broadband improvement when we use this kind of continuous momentum measurement. And here we fix the laser power to be optimized over this regime. And we just measure the phase quadrature. And there would be this like broadband kind of improvement in the momentum sensing protocol. So
on this plot,
yeah,
how is it? Is there two curves I should look at to compare like the position versus
momentum? Oh yeah, so basically the gray curve over here is the total noise for the velocity sensing, and the dashed line over here, the black dashed line, that is the position sensing noise PSD, which was optimized for the 1 megahertz target frequency. So,
that dashed line has lower noise, right? Is it?
Oh, the black dashed line. So this one over in here. So,
I see. I'm looking at it over on the right, but you're saying that the relevant, are you saying we should focus on this middle region?
Oh yeah. Okay. Focus on until this region where in the broadband sense okay. And with this, I just also wanted to show you how it like helps us in terms of like dark matter detection. So here we are plotting the signal to noise ratio for a gravitational signal from the dark matter. So for those signals, we are interested in the time scales of the signal, which is pretty fast signals, as the dark matter candidates moves by at this very high velocity, like 220 kilometer per second. So this is our regime of interest. And here we can see that the signal to noise ratio can have improvement or enhancement from this kind of velocity sensing protocol in comparison to the position sensing protocol, which is being shown here. So these are the kind of benefits we would get. So I think in the next couple of slides, I wanted to talk about the way to combine squeezing and back action evasion through this continuous momentum measurement protocol together. So here, like the noise spectrum density for the continuous position measurement. So here it's a bit more mathematical description I wanted to like include. So here we are actually, instead of measuring just the phase quadrature, we are writing out the noise in case we measure a combination of the phase and amplitude quadrature at the output. So that is what this is. But I am not going to go into detail about all these terms, but I just want you to focus on this highlighted part, which actually highlights the back action noise part over in this regime. So in contrast, the momentum, if we can access a probe to momentum coupling like this, so if we can do a continuous momentum measurement in this form, then the back action noise would look like this highlighted part over in here. So what I want you to focus on over in here is that in the momentum sensing protocol, there is this dependence on omega m, where omega m is the mechanical resonance frequency of the mechanical oscillator we have. So in the case, let's say if we are measuring the phase quadrature, that means theta is just zero. So this is the back action noise part, the highlighted part. So in this phase quadrature measurement, if at the limit of mechanical frequency going to zero, which is the free particle limit, we would not have a back action noise in the continuous momentum measurement protocol. So that's how the continuous momentum measurement protocol becomes back action evading in this way. So and then once you get rid of the back action noise, you can always use squeezing, the correlations in squeezing to reduce the leftover short noise term. So that is kind of the way we think about how we can combine these quantum resources. And this is like, that is what we have shown in our paper over here. So I would like to quickly show the two SAR strategies that we talked about in the paper. So here in the left-hand side, what I am showing is the broadband SAR strategy, which is tailored for these gravitational signals from heavy dark matter candidates, because we would see an impulse in that case. So for those cases, what we want to do is like measure the phase quadrature and fix the laser power at some optimized, like at our target frequency, which is the 10 to the power 6 or 1 megahertz target frequency, as I showed before. So here, what happens is, the momentum sensing case again gives us like a broadband improvement over this regime, as you can see. And squeezing helps us in reducing the noise floor in the short noise dominated regime. So the short noise dominated regime is the higher frequency part over in here. So as we are squeezing the short noise quadrature, we would get the benefit from squeezing in the higher frequency part in this SAR strategy. And I also wanted to show another plot. So this is a narrow band search. So this is actually not for the kind of heavy gravitational signal from heavy dark matter candidates. This is for the ultralight dark matter candidates I was talking about at the beginning of my talk, which kind of provides a coherent wave field in the background. So it kind of provides a monochromatic signal. And for those signals, what we can do is we can search for those signals by tuning our laser power optimally at every frequency. Like that is the ideal kind of search, that we tune our laser power optimally at every frequency to achieve the SQL at every frequency. And also what we can do is measure the combination of quadrature, like the optimal combination of quadrature, which gets rid of the back action noise in some way. So in that SAR strategy, we can see that these are the position sensing and momentum sensing comparison, and how they are related, the noise wise, is through this scaling, which is the mechanical frequency over this measurement frequency over in here. So in this search strategy, what happens is above the resonance frequency, the momentum sensing has a better performance, and also because we are just measuring the short noise over in here, because we have evaded back action through optimally measuring a combination of quadrature, we can use squeezing to reduce the short noise over the whole regime. So that is the kind of benefit we would see from squeezing and momentum sensing over in here. So yeah, so I think up to this, I wanted to show like the measurement induced noise reduction strategy. So I don't know if I have a couple of more minutes to show some ongoing work.
Well, we're running a little bit over time, but I think that's okay. We'll just have to, I mean, it's up to you. Like, we can eat into the time that's allotted for this meeting afterwards, if you like. So it's really up to you.
Okay. Yeah, I guess I can probably finish in the next 2-3 minutes. I just want to quickly show like the other things that we are currently working on. Till now I have talked about the measurement added noise suppression, but one more challenge on the top of that is the scale of the device, as I was talking about. So within WindChime, we have discussed that because we will have so many sensors in an array. If we have to probe every sensor with light, then we will be severely limited by the power requirement, like how much power of the light we would need to probe this system. So one of the ways to mitigate that we are currently thinking about is moving from optical domain readout to microwave domain readout. So in the optical domain, the typical frequency scales, like the cavity frequency and the cavity lifetime, they have these kind of scales in comparison to the microwave cavity scales, which are much lower. So if we are interrogating the system with pulse of light, then the power requirement actually looks like this. So we can see that microwave domain would have much less power requirement than the optical domain. And also in this microwave domain, one more thing we are working on, which is again on the measurement induced noise suppression side, is that, as I mentioned, that we want to move to a interaction Hamiltonian, which is a direct momentum to probe coupling. But in the optomechanical system, we don't have an intrinsic Hamiltonian which shows that. So instead, if we look at a magnetomechanical regime or electromechanical regime, we can probably remember from high school physics stuff, the Faraday's law says that the induced EMF is proportional to the velocity of a moving coil in a magnetic field. So here the pictures I am showing is from a textbook which shows how a voice coil work in a loudspeaker. So they actually exploit this principle, induced EMF dependence on velocity. So we are also exploiting the same kind of characteristic, and we are trying to just we are working on the optimum way to observe that EMF. So we have a specific example in mind which we have worked out, and we are currently writing up that paper. So and this is the very last slide. So this is just the WindChime vision. So WindChime, the ultimate goal of WindChime is the gravitational detection of dark matter with these heavy dark matter candidates. But along the way, we can also look for some other non-gravitational signals too. Here, one example is being shown, which is a B minus L vector boson interaction, which we can also be sensitive to. And the work we are doing on the measurement into sight can help us in reaching these sensitivities to achieve this kind of exclusion plots. So with this, I'd like to just end by showing the summary slide and some current and future directions that I am interested in or we are currently working on. At the very end, this is the acknowledgement slide for WindChime collaboration and my advisors and group mates. And thank you for your attention.
Okay, fantastic. Let's thank Sahitri for a nice talk. And we can just open it up to questions. If you have a question, just unmute and go ahead and ask. So Oh, go ahead, Benny.
Oh no, I have very, very, very naive question. So, how much of these things are very like dark matter is very important? Like, because these techniques seems to be very, like, more widely applicable. So I just wondered, like, yeah.
I mean, how we can use these techniques in other other problems. Yeah, I think one of the things we have thought about other than like using it for dark matter searches is doing like pressure calibration. So like you have these background gas particles which can hit the hit your mechanical sensor and perturb it, and those are kind of also impulse metrology problem. We can translate those problems to in terms of impulse metrology, and for like this would let us do a better vacuum like a vacuum pressure calibration or something like that. So yeah, that is I think one example I can think of, and another is I guess we can also try to detect low energy photons from here. So those are two examples, I guess.
I see. Thanks.
Oh, Cece, you don't have to raise your hand. Just go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah, thanks. So I just have a naive question. So I think you sort of mentioned that in the last slide. So what's the difference between this detection of dark matter and with other sensing tasks like a LIGO, like gravitational wave detection? So what's the difference and similarities between two projects?
Okay, yeah, sure. So I think the main difference with LIGO would be so it's definitely a smaller scale setup that we are thinking, than LIGO. But other than that too, we are operating in this, we are trying to detect this high bandwidth force detection. So we are operating in a much higher frequency regime than LIGO. So LIGO, I think, is mostly targeting gravitational waves which are in the like the audio band kind of thing. So here we are thinking about like a megahertz kind of signal. And in terms of the signal also, I think it's we are trying to detect an impulse, where in case of LIGO it would be more like a different kind of signal from the gravitational wave. I think, how it moves the detector would be just a bit different than just an impulse over a short period of time. So,
yeah. So, so I guess that brings me to my second question. So, I guess also like in LIGO or other scenarios, squeezing and this QND measurement also helps improve the sensitivity. So. So basically, what's the specific tricks you are doing here in order to improve the sensitivity for this specific type of signal and high bandwidth? So I guess that's the question.
I will go back to this slide probably. Yeah, so this specific setup that I showed, it is actually inspired from LIGO related work only, where they were looking for this speed meter kind of setup. I think that's what they call. So here, I think in LIGO, when I talked to some of the people from LIGO, what they said is that their delay line, that is where the optical loss happens. And in LIGO, because it's larger scale, a very large scale experiment, that optical loss is actually huge. So that's why the kind of benefits we would expect from this kind of speed meter setup was not actually showing up over there. So in our case, I think because we are looking at a smaller scale system, we might be able to make it work with lower amount of optical loss for this kind of specific design with this kind of QND measurement. And on the squeezing side, I think in LIGO, what I think in advanced LIGO they are using is frequency dependent squeezing to lower the noise floor at over a broad frequency range. For our case, we will probably not need to do a frequency dependent squeezing. We will probably can just squeeze one of the quadratures throughout a broad frequency range. I think, yeah, that might help in like simplifying this problem. So
thanks. So just a last question. So you also mentioned you are the work on using like microwave detection and so on. So is that a different technique to detect dark matter in a different frequency range, or it's for a different purpose? I guess
sorry. Yeah, I should have made it clear. So I think, I mean, when I showed the microwave domain or this is targeted for the wind chime sensors only, like for the gravitational detection of dark matter only. But here we are just trying to reduce the how much power we would need in order to probe these systems in the wind chime sensors. So this is for the gravitational signal only, and this specific readout scheme is also aimed towards like this impulse signal from gravitational interaction with dark matter. It is just that by using this readout technique instead in the place of like doing an optical readout, if we use this kind of readout technique, we might be able to evade the back action noise and achieve a lower noise floor to be sensitive to more like a smaller velocity change or something like that. So that's the like motivation behind this work.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks, Sissy. Yeah.
Okay. At this point, I'm going to suggest that we thank Sohitri again.